Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska supports a statewide study on online sales tax collection, and KUCB explains an ongoing project celebrating 20 years of local news. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Thursday, January 31st, 2019. The Unalaska City Council wants more information before it decides whether to tax sales from online retailers like Amazon. That's why councilors voted last week to contribute $5,000 to the Alaska Municipal League. The money will go towards an AML working group studying how communities across the state might collect sales tax revenue from residents' online purchases. That possibility emerged last year under the Supreme Court's Wayfair decision, and Mayor Frank Kelty says Unalaska should learn its options.
I think it's worthwhile to get more information on this topic and see how it might work and if it will be a benefit.
While councillors unanimously agreed to support the study, they were adamant that they haven't made a final decision about imposing a new tax. Here's Vice Mayor Dennis Robinson.
Taxation is always tough, especially with the cost of living in this community. But on the flip side of that, this community is required to put in the infrastructure to handle all that stuff that comes in. So it is a concern that we need to really take up.
Officials have not released an estimate on how much the city of Unalaska stands to gain if sales taxes are collected from online purchases. But financial reports show that revenue from the city's existing 3% sales tax has declined more than $1 million over the last 4 years. Finance Director Clay Darnell told councillors he's still analyzing why that revenue is down. The City Council's $5,000 contribution to AML comes in at $2,500 less than the organization requested. It also joins donations from a handful of other Alaska municipalities supporting the study, including Bethel, Ketchikan, and Soldotna. Meanwhile, in Juneau, Amazon shoppers have already noticed a new charge on their purchases. That's because the capital has started collecting local sales tax on the majority of Amazon sales made by Juneau residents. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more.
Joshua Smith is a frequent Amazon customer. Since moving to Juneau from Seattle, he says he's become pretty reliant on it.
One definite benefit to using Amazon for the 4 years that I've lived in Alaska was the fact that, you know, I didn't have to pay tax. And I looked at that as basically a perk to living in Alaska.
Alaska doesn't have a statewide sales tax, but municipalities can set their own. Juneau's is 5%. Before January 1st, Amazon charged local sales tax on just a small portion of purchases. Smith says he's never noticed it before. But earlier this month, it started showing up on his receipts. He's not happy to be paying more for the same products, but he says he doesn't expect it to impact his customer loyalty much.
I'm a happily tax-abiding citizen, and I understand that's how our society works. I think Amazon is a great service, and I don't know what I would do without it in Alaska.
For local business owners who compete with Amazon and other online retailers, it's a welcome change. City Finance Director Bob Bartholomew says it's a matter of fairness for one thing.
Our sales tax being applied to local businesses but not online businesses is just a disparity. And if we have an opportunity to correct it, from my perspective, from a policy perspective, that's the right thing to do.
But it's also about the bottom line. He says based on his rough estimates, Juneau loses about $2.5 to $3 million annually in sales tax revenue from online purchases. That's why he's eager to see progress on a plan to standardize sales tax collection across the state. The Alaska Municipal League has been spearheading that effort since last summer. That's when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states can now charge sales tax on purchases from out-of-state online retailers. Here's Executive Director Nils Andreasen.
If we look at the Wayfair case, basically says that a single-level statewide administration needs to occur so that instead of 100 taxing jurisdictions that Amazon has to deal with, there is a single point of contact.
Did you catch that? He said Alaska has 100 separate municipal sales tax jurisdictions. So far, 9 of them have contributed money to the project. It will be at least a year before they have a proposal. Then they'll have to get everyone on board. Bob Bartholomew from Juneau points out that on top of different tax rates, each community also has different exemptions and caps on what they tax.
Sales tax is kind of baked into the financial fabric of every individual community. So changing that, it's just going to be challenging.
The Juneau Assembly and other governing bodies will have to decide whether to adopt the final proposal, whatever that looks like. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
The U.S. Coast Guard rescued an injured crewman yesterday from a commercial fishing vessel in the Bering Sea. Officials say the FV Golden Alaska was fishing 40 miles north of Cold Bay when the man reported suffering from severe leg pain. The Coast Guard's winter operating station in Cold Bay launched a Jayhawk helicopter crew to medevac the 35-year-old man from the vessel and transport him to town. Officials say the crewman was in stable condition when he arrived at the Cold Bay Clinic for treatment. On Alaska, Community Broadcasting has covered local news for the past 20 years, and to mark that anniversary, KUCB is spending every Thursday of 2019 exploring our archives, looking back at former reporters, and sharing some of their stories. This month, we've been focused on Jim Paulin, who started the newsroom in the late 1990s. This is a story he reported after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, introduced by Aaron Enlow, who was hosting Flash on Alaska.
Channel 8 reporter Jim Paulin is in New York City this week covering the story of Unalaska's generous donation to the victims of the terrorist attacks last month. He filed this report earlier, and we're going to go watch it on tape now. Come along.
And away we go.
In New York City this morning, as the plane approached LaGuardia Airport, flying slowly over Manhattan, I felt like I was in a funeral procession. But there seems to be a real strong and defiant spirit here. American flags were everywhere, along with posters of Osama bin Laden, wanted dead or alive. And on the airport bus, I chatted with a man who said his office was on the 56th floor of the World Trade Center. He emphasized was. Fortunately, he was not in the building when terrorists crashed jetliners into it on September 11th. So I was asking a bus driver about hotels, and this fellow asked if I had reservations. I said I didn't think I needed any, since I heard there were a lot of vacancies because of a downturn in tourism following the attacks. He said you should have shopped online if you'd wanted to get a cheap rate. New York's back, he said. I'm working on a story now about the city of Unalaska's donation of $50,000 to New York City, $25,000 to the families of firefighters, police, and EMTs who died in the attacks or in their aftermath. And I spoke with a representative of St. Vincent Catholic Medical Center today, Development Director Bill Evans. That's the hospital the city plans to give $25,000 to. He said the hospital is thrilled with the donation and called it an extraordinary story. Evans said that St. Vincent's treated more than 700 victims, more than any other hospital in New York. The city of Unalaska's contribution, however, was intended for long-term care of burn victims, but Evans said St. Vincent's only provided initial treatment, as St. Vincent's does not actually have a formal burn treatment center. He said burn victims with long-term needs have been transferred to the burn center at New York Cornell Hospital. Still, he said it's a wonderful thing that the city of Unalaska did, and is awaiting a letter from the city to post on the wall of hope and remembrance near the emergency room, along with letters from school children around the country, and also with posters of missing people posted by family members. In New York City, this is Jim Paulin.
That was a 2001 report from Jim Paulin, the first news director of Unalaska Community Broadcasting. He now writes for the Bristol Bay Times, Dutch Harbor Fisherman newspaper. And the end of January means the end of our look back at Jim Paulin's work. Starting in February, we'll focus on Charlie Homans, the next available reporter on our list of past newsroom staff. This is a series we'll be sharing all year long in honor of the 20th anniversary of Unalaska Community Broadcasting's local newsroom. But before we get too far into the series, I sat down with my colleague and fellow KUCB reporter Zoe Sobel to ask how she came up with the idea for this project.
So back around the time that we had our 24-hour fundraiser, we were talking about how it was 10 years of KUCB. And then I decided that we should know how long there was a newsroom. And it turned out that 20 years was going to be this year. And I really want to know more about the history of the station and the reporters who were coming before us. So it seemed like a perfect way to do that, especially since we've had essentially 12 reporters and there are 12 months in a year.
And just to be totally clear, you're saying that even though KUCB recently turned 10 years old, our radio station actually had a newsroom for 10 years prior to that, that Unalaska Community Broadcasting had a local newsroom back when we were still a repeater station called KIAL, rebroadcasting the feed from KDLG in Dillingham, you know, back before we even had our current call letters.
Yeah, so you did a story about 10 years of KUCB identity. And in that story, you talked about how at the beginning, Jim Pollan would cut into our KDLG repeater and do local news. And that's how it started, which is not at all like what we have now. And so I wanted to know a little bit more about the people who came before us and what was important then and just how technology changed and how the station operates back then when we were both little kids to now we're adults.
And so the idea is to remember the station's pretty long list of past reporters and to sort of celebrate all the work that they did for the community, right?
Oh, for sure. Everybody in Unalaska is a workaholic. And I know that's true for reporters from my experience. And I think taking a little bit of time to pay attention to some of the really hard and good work that they did during their time here is important and also just helps educate all of us a little bit more about the history of this place that we call home.
And rather than sort of produce one big anniversary story, you propose that we actually feature one reporter each month for the entire year.
Yeah, so since we've had 12 full-time reporters, it seems like only fair to dedicate 1 month to each of them. So we've had Mr. January, Jim Pollan. And Laura, you've actually been tasked with finding the person that we thought was going to be in February, but you had some trouble.
Right. So the second reporter in Unalaska Community Broadcasting's history was a man named Morris Bracey. And he was technically the second reporter after Jim and before Charlie Homan. So I was going to try to find this man, Morris, and interview him about his experience. But he's impressively off the grid. We searched all the emails that we have of his on records, and I sent out emails, and they all bounced back. We did a lot of research to find every phone number for every Morris Bracey that we could find kind of in the country.
Which, shockingly, there are a number of.
There are some of them, and we would call phone numbers and wasn't really getting anybody, leaving voicemails that were never being returned. So as far as we know, he's just out there doing something completely different or enjoying his privacy. So unfortunately, we're not able to profile Morris Bracey. So if you remember him and from hearing his stories many years ago, then it's not because we didn't want to include him. Just unfortunately, he's a hard man to find. But on the positive side, he really does seem to be the only person to have that issue. Everybody else that we're looking at on the list of 12 reporters is somebody that we're very confident that we're going to be able to contact, or we've already done so. So I think that should be the only instance.
Yeah, and instead we're going to get to Charlie Homans just a little bit sooner, and I got to talk to him back in November when I was in New York, and it was really wonderful. I got to go visit him at the New York Times, where he works covering politics for the New York Times Magazine. It was just exciting to hear about what life was like then, and we're happy to share that with you in February.
And what exactly can the listeners expect in February? How is this series actually going to work?
Yeah, so similar to in January, the first Thursday of the month, we're going to air a conversation. This month, it will be with me and Charlie talking about his time in Unalaska and talking about where he is now and how being in Unalaska helped him get there. Then every subsequent Thursday for that month, we're going to hear one of his stories from his time there. And there are some fun ones.
I feel like we're going to hear some really interesting personal stories from them, but we're also going to hear some real reporting gems. I mean, I have Ann Hillman, who worked here for 3 years, and then I also have Greta Mart and Lauren Rosenthal. I mean, who else are you profiling, Zoe?
There are so many people that I still have to talk to, but I also have interviews in the bag with John Ryan, who was here for a summer when Shell was going on, and then also talking with Annie Ropeek, who is here for just under 2 years as the last permanent reporter before I started. So really excited to share all of them.
That was KUCB reporter Zoe Sobel speaking about our ongoing project to profile the radio station's past reporters in honor of the 20th anniversary of our newsroom. Tune in next Thursday for Zoe's conversation with Charlie Homans, the third reporter at Unalaska Community Broadcasting. Unalaska's basketball teams are away this weekend for the Seward Invitational. KUCB will bring you all of the games live here on 89.7 FM starting this afternoon. The Raider girls play Hutchison first at 3 o'clock, followed by the boys at 4:30. Then tomorrow, both squads will take on Eelson before finishing the tournament on Saturday with games against Seward. You can find more information and the full tournament schedule at KUCB's Facebook page. Also happening this weekend is February's First Friday Open Mic, organized by the Aleutian Arts Council and the Museum of the Aleutians. The free event starts tomorrow night at 6:30 at the museum, which will also host an open house at the same time. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.